Hello everyone, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rob Jones, Content Manager at the Institute, and in this podcast we will be looking at news from the week beginning 27th of May. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
Our first story, Kate, asks, should leaders slash working hours to fight climate change? According to a new report from Future of Work think tank Autonomy, significant cuts to the duration of the working week are required to decarbonise the planet's atmosphere and combat climate change. Written by Philip Frey, The Ecological Limits of Work asks us to rethink the whole concept of work, in that instead of discussing how to maximise economic performance by forcing the vast majority of the population to work long hours to the benefit of capital owners, the climate crisis forces us to change the conversation and raise the question, provided current levels of carbon intensity of our economies and current levels of productivity, how much work can we afford? Kate, I would like to ask, how likely is it that leaders will make policy shifts in response to such messages?
I think it's very likely. If we look at the two big happenings, if you like, in the UK in recent weeks, we'll see that Greta Thunberg was calling for corporations to make important changes because she recognised that it's only on those large scales that we're going to be able to see and make real difference. Similarly, we've had Extinction Rebellion campaigning for individual actions and appealing to corporations to change. So undoubtedly, if we're going to make the carbon emission targets that we keep being told that we need to do, then there is a need for radical change. And one solution, of course, is the reduction in the working week. But I think, like with many of these big changes that really make us reassess how we work, it's not going to just be a single voice or a single approach. It's got to gather a momentum. And of course, well-being at work, a strong campaign. Flexible working, a strong campaign. Work-life balance, strong campaigns. Heightened environmental awareness, strong campaign. These will all come together and we will see a shift. But of course, there's always these economic realities mitigating against those changes. And this is the path that we're going to have to navigate.
Okay, thank you very much, Kate. Our second story is based on research by Yorkshire Bank that reveals 46% of the 2,000 entrepreneurs surveyed across a variety of sectors in the UK's 10 biggest cities view technology as more important to their businesses than their people. Reflecting on the findings of its 20th of May report, Expect More, Gavin Opperman noted that whilst technology is disrupting many aspects of our lives and truly revolutionising the way we work, he warned that we shouldn't forget the importance of people in a digital economy. It is the personal element that helps to build a rapport, creating the long-standing relationships necessary for a trusting and efficient connection between business and customer. Kate, looking at this report, how worrying is it that such a large proportion of SME leaders value their technology over the people that keep their companies going?
We need to look at where we are in this so-called fourth industrial revolution. And at the moment, particularly amongst SMEs, trying to keep up to date with new technologies, trying to survive when they might see their businesses being really attacked by AI substitutes. I don't think it's surprising at this moment in time they're saying, well, this is a greater headache than getting people. But as Opperman points out, there is no substitute for people, for the empathy they're able to show, for the emotional intelligence. And when often we look at SMEs and ask what are the distinct advantages that they bring, it's their ability to be agile, to respond to customer need, to give a friendly, personalised service. If they import tech solutions that do away with all of that, then their businesses won't be sustainable. So I think, Rod, it's a moment in time where these seem to be bigger headaches. But once business have adjusted, they've got the technology that they need to provide the great service that they have been providing, there is no substitute for getting the right people.
Thank you very much, Kate. Now, our next story looks at an organisation called WageStream, which has developed technology to give workers access to their wages at any time during the month for a small fee, rather than making them wait for their monthly pay. Mr. Briffett, the company's chief executive and co-founder, states that the antiquated monthly pay cycle inflicts huge financial damage on household finances and its days are numbered. Too many people are pushed into a corner by in-work poverty and forced into the hands of payday lenders and high-cost credit. My question, Kate, is, do you think organisations should take a more active role in supporting the financial health of their employees?
As we recently reported in Edge, being in debt can have a severely adverse effect on your working life. Not only have you got the worry to contend with, which might contribute to sleeplessness and other signs of anxiety and stress, you've also got creditors trying to get in touch with you, phoning you during the working day. So this is a topic that is of interest to employers. How they go about helping their employees who are struggling with debt is a different question. Some may argue that this is an interference in someone's private life, and as long as it's not too intrusive, then that is entirely up to them. But then I think there's also the case where if you can facilitate an employee getting to the end of the month without having to resort to high-cost short-term loans, then that is to be encouraged. I think, as with so many initiatives, it's how and what works for the organisation, the sort of culture that the organisation has, the extent to which that they feel it's appropriate to, as it were, intrude into their employees' lives. But I think, on balance, the arguments for offering such schemes are probably stronger than saying, no, this is nothing to do with us, it's a private matter.
Thank you very much, Kate. And finally, an article in May the 26th FE Week describes how the Institute for Apprentices is to trial gender-neutral language in a bid to boost female STEM applicants after research found masculine words in job adverts such as ambition, challenging, and leader deter them from applying. Kate, how do you view this initiative by the Institute for Apprentices?
We've known for so long that so much of leadership and the words that describe particularly leaders are essentially what one might consider masculine traits. So it's not really surprising that some girls are put off applying for jobs, which they have that association with these jobs for boys and for men. It gives you an insight in how long it takes to change things and also how important language is in introducing the change, sustaining the change we want, and in this way attracting people. There must be so many words that we use that people feel excluded by. So any attention that's paid to this sort of initiative has to be welcome. And I think anyone who makes excuses and says, oh, we don't need to do this, and these are not gender-specific terms at all, challenge that rather than the actual attempts to do something really good here.
Okay, thank you very much, Kate. Well, that concludes this week's episode, and listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thanks, Rod.